So if you, if it's a, so if it's, if it's something that you don't understand, assume that there are other people in the world that understand it and play a useful role socially to help the conversation by raising it. Because, for example, in the first talk, sorry, the second talk, which I thought was really great, so I knew all about the Java Literacy Theory. If that was the first time you were hearing about the Java Literacy Theory, you probably didn't get much. Nobody raised their hand and said, wait a minute, what is the Java Literacy Theory? But one of the things that we're about here at Perimeter is people with different interests and different educations communicating and doing science together. And the very first thing is getting that common vocabulary. So it's very proper in this framework. If you don't understand what somebody is saying, stop the show. Really, nobody's going to criticize you. Nobody's going to think you're dumb. In fact, it's the opposite. Stop the show and say, hey, wait a minute. What did you just say? What does that mean?
I think there won't be any show if ever been done.
Yeah. You'd be surprised. Anyway, we could go much more in that direction. Because the aim is to start conversations. It doesn't actually, the speakers are going to hate me for this, because it doesn't actually matter if the speakers finish their talk. What matters is that we start conversations with them on that. Okay, having said that, Marcus is first up this afternoon. And my very first question to Marcus is, what is a page curve?
Okay, I will see it on the third slide.
Isn't that the first? Okay, first.
Oh yeah, it's here actually. It's this black thing. Yeah. So it's basically entanglement entropy, and I will talk about how to compute entanglement entropy without assuming all of quantum mechanics. In particular, in this context of black holes, people find interesting.
Should the microphone on, please?
Oh, my.
Oh, yes. I forgot. It's fine now.
Does it? Okay. Yeah, let's assume.
Perfect, thank you.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, so basically, I will show that you don't have to assume all of quantum theory to compute entanglement entropies. And this is particular in the context of black holes, where people are interested basically in entanglement, and I will come to that a bit later, between what's like black hole and its Hawking radiation. And what you get and what you've seen before, many of you have seen before, is this black curve here, which is Page's curve. But I will come to that. So here's a bit of motivation. So some people have just considered recently modifications of quantum mechanics. So basically, they have looked at the black hole information paradox and found the difficulties so bad that they thought maybe actually we have to modify quantum theory to understand how all of that can be unitary, for example. So here's like an example, paper by Horowitz and Maldacena, the black hole final state. Yeah, there are many of those, but this is one example where they say here, we impose a final state boundary condition at black hole singularities. This resolves the apparent contradiction between string theory and semi-classical arguments. So somehow they modify the usual formulas of quantum mechanics by putting some final state as a kind of post-selection. So don't ask me too many questions about this because I really don't know too many details. But if you're really smart, and if you're at PI, and if your name is Daniel Gottesman, yeah, then you can come up with an easy answer to that, which was a paper a bit later, where they showed that this modification here doesn't really work the way they thought it would. So actually, it doesn't preserve unitarity. They show you that. They point out that in this scenario, you can have departures from unitarity, and you can have information loss. And so this is some kind of thing that happened quite often in the last few decades. So people suggested some modification of quantum mechanics, and then it was shown that this modification has really problems. And here's another example that I'd like to give. I've given that before. So there's this theory by Steven Weinberg, where he had this paper where he says, we present a general framework with nonlinear corrections in ordinary quantum mechanics. And then you can try to work out experiments, you can try to test this theory, but in the end you find that this is problematic. So there was this follow-up paper here by Gisard, who said that this theory doesn't really work the way it's supposed to, because you can have faster than light information transfer. So here he writes, like below, we show.
Why doesn't it work again?
Why? So there's a general result. Like you can prove a theorem basically that any like a big class of nonlinearities that you introduce.
Not a bug.
It would be great to have it, yeah. But I don't think it was intended to have that from the start. Yeah, maybe. So anyway, like the message is, once you do ad hoc modifications just to the formalism, then this is problematic. What you might want to do instead, and this is something people in quantum foundations do a lot, is to talk about physical principles instead of the formalism, and just say what kind of principles you might want to modify and which ones you might want to keep. And this is something that we've done here in this little paper, which is, by the way, not an approach to quantum gravity, but it is related to the way that it looks at this black hole information paradox. But the main idea is to work in a framework where we don't just look at the formalism of quantum mechanics, but at its meaning, like what it physically actually says. And the meaning of quantum theory, in particular, is that it predicts detector clicks. So it predicts probabilities of measurements. And it gives you a framework in which you can describe, for example, laboratory situations where you have preparations, transformations, and measurements. Maybe this is not all you want to describe, but at least you should be able to describe those situations. And then you can just say, well, let's look at all these theories that describe detector click probabilities. And quantum theory is just one special case. Another special case is just classical probability theory. And there are many other things you can come up. Quantum foundations people like to study them. So some of them violate Bell inequalities, for example, in a different way than quantum theory does, and so on. So you can basically look at this landscape here. And now the idea is you look again at some calculations in the context of black hole information, but don't assume all of quantum theory. Don't assume the full formalism. And instead, what you want to do is just assume a few basic principles that you kind of are very confident that they should hold in basically all situations. And then in this landscape, you will find like a sub class of theories which just satisfy these principles. And then you can try to make a statement for all of them at once. And the principles that we looked at here in this paper, so you can write them down mathematically, of course, but if you interpret them what they mean, then this is basically what they mean. So like the first principle says that we must have theories that somehow can look classical if you have decoherence. So somehow you have a decoherence map which brings you from whatever theory you have down to a classical probability. Then you want something like a tensor product rule. This is basically the same that you have in quantum theory. And the operational formulation is to say you have tomographic locality. And basically, if you have an entangled state, then the state is described by the local statistics and the correlations. Yeah. And no other stuff comes on top of that. Then you somehow want that all pure states are the same in principle. So if you have two pure states, you want that you could evolve one state in time to the other. And now if you just take that and don't just use the usual Hilbert space formalism, what this means is that you just make less assumptions. Yeah? You're not using all of quantum theory's assumptions, but just some of them. And classical probability theory satisfies those, for example. But you can also think of other things going on which are not described in this framework. The nice thing is that this preserves all the things we like about quantum theory. And we don't want to give up, and also not in the black hole information paradox, for example, unitarity. And when you talk about unitarity in quantum mechanics, what you usually mean is that it's time reversible, so you can in principle go back, you don't have information loss. And you have causality as well, and you talk about subsystems in the usual way. So this is all preserved here in that framework. Okay, so in the following, so we can basically do the calculations for only assuming these three things, which gives you like this yellow set of theories, whatever that is. What I was just showing in the next slide is only for a subset of that. Yeah? Like turns out that you can be a bit more specific and then your result just looks nicer. You can have nice plots. And I will only talk about those kind of theories, which are even nicer.
What is CPT?
that's classical probability theory. So it's not like the CPT symmetry. Yeah, that's maybe confusing. Yeah.
So could you, for instance, name one more principle that quantum theory would satisfy than those two, just to have an idea why it's more restrictive?
Yeah, so let me give you an example. Let me just right away tell you what quantum theory is in that picture. Quantum theory just means that states are density matrices. Yeah. And so if you have a two-level system, then the set of states is just the 2x2 density matrices. That's like a Bloch ball. Yeah. And that Bloch ball satisfies all these things. For example, you can have the classical thing sitting inside. The diagonal matrices are basically inside here, and so on. But you could have a theory which has a square as a state space, yeah. For example. That would also be like a bit. So that would have two levels, if you think of it a bit for a few minutes. And that would also satisfy these things. Yeah. You can rotate the Bloch ball. You can rotate the thing, and so on. You can have the analog of unitaries. But this would not be density matrices. So anything else you like about quantum theory would go wrong for that. Cannot think of a good example now. I don't know. Schmidt decomposition or something like that. Okay. It's at the heart of quantum theory.
You're ignoring it.
No, no. I'm basically reformulating it operationally. It just physically means that you don't have information loss. So you can think of running time evolution backwards, and you arrive where you started. So that would be unitarity. And you can have that here as well. It would just not be described by actual operators that are unitary matrices. It would just be other maps that describe these transformations. Classically, it would just be permutations of your microstate. Yeah. Yeah, tomography. So it's not that important for what follows, but the idea is, if you have an entangled state, here's A, here's B, and then you have your state, and you don't know what it is, then you can find out what that state is just by measuring locally here. Oh yeah, thanks. And measuring locally there, and looking up the correlations, comparing the correlations. Yeah, this will allow you to reconstruct the state. You don't have to put a big device here that does a known local measurement. But it's not that important for what follows. OK, so what do we get then? Basically, you can just look at this calculation in Page's paper. And that's now for those who haven't seen it. It's very simple. So basically, it's all about quantum information in the first place. So you say, suppose you have just a bunch of qubits, n of them, and maybe you remove a few of those. So you remove little n qubits out of the big n qubits. And then you say the whole system is described by a pure state. And if you don't want to make specific assumptions about the physics of that thing, then you would say that it's an actual random, like a typical random pure state. And a pure state will be entangled. So you can compute the entanglement entropy. And that will depend on this little n here, of course. And what you get is a curve like that. So here's the little n. And if n is 0, you didn't remove anything, then you don't have any entanglement entropy. So you start with 0 here. And then you remove qubits, and then you come up with an entangled state. So the local entanglement entropy just grows. And it grows until you have your halfway. Then you have a maximal entangled state, and then it goes back again. And in the context of the black hole information paradox, as Page phrased it, this is just interpreted as saying that this thing is like a black hole. And these degrees of freedom here are just like basically the Hawking radiation degrees of freedom. Yeah. And then this little n would be something like time. And you would see entanglement entropy first grow and then go down again. And unitarity is encoded in the fact that it goes back to 0 in the end. So in the end, you will arrive at a pure state. OK? Now what we did here is just say, well, what if these are not qubits, but these arbitrary things that just satisfy our postulate? Yeah. Could be anything. Maybe something like the square that I've drawn there. Maybe a square would be bad, but some other things. And then you can just do the calculation again and do it basically for this class of theories that I've pointed at yellow here. Okay. Then you will find that there pops up as a solution some integer, little r. And this little r is something that Raphael Sorkin, I guess, knows. It's related to Sorkin's hierarchy. And that kind of labels the possible behaviors you can have there. It turns out the solutions where r is just equal to 1, that turns out to be classical probability theory. Yeah. And in the case that r equal to 1 and you plot the entanglement entropy, you just get all 0. Yeah. Now, this should not be very surprising because classically there is no entanglement, so it will always be 0 entanglement. In quantum theory, you just get this integer r equal to 2, and then you get the nice page curve here. It's exactly the same as you have in Page's paper. Yeah. Now, what about these other r's? So r could be 3 or 4, and this would be other theories that would not be of the standard Hilbert space form. So what do they look like? Well, you can actually give a closed form expression for that. Well, if you say, well, you can say quantum theory is just confirmed, yeah, by experiment, then there's no need to modify anyway. Or you can say maybe this is a regime.
Yeah, but this particular modification, isn't it ruled out?
Right. In the same way that quantum theory was ruled out until people actually made performed interference experiments.
Quantum theory was ruled out.
Well, no one saw interference until.
So, so it's,
maybe subsequently someone will see this interference. This kind of
no, but they look for it and then.
It's experimentally ruled out in standard optics, and that's it. No? But here, if you have it, it turns out that the curves that you get, if you put in the little r in this general formula, and actually this is not the Shen entropy, but it's like Rényi 2 entropy. As many of you know, this is easier to compute, but looks very much the same. Then you find that for r equal to 3, you find a curve like that. For r equal to 4, you find a curve like that, and so on. So this may actually be surprising because this one here is something like the semi-classical approximation. So semi-classically, we would expect entropy just to grow and never to come back again. And as it turns out, these more general theories actually follow the semi-classical approximation for a longer time. Yeah. And then suddenly go back to zero, which is something like unitarity. You end up with a pure state in the end. So somehow, even though they are even stranger than quantum, they would be more classical, those things. Now, they would follow this classical curve for longer times. OK, you can actually generalize. Yeah?
In your previous picture, it looks like it's completely symmetric.
Yes.
Changed.
Yes. So. Yeah, that, good question. So it's not the case here. So in quantum theory, if you have AB in a pure state, then the entropy of A is the same as the entropy of B because you have the Schmidt decomposition. Yeah, you don't have a Schmidt decomposition for those theories, so it's asymmetric. So if you look at the entropy, this is of the radiation. If you look at that of the black hole, you should symmetrically just reflect that for the other side. So that would give very sharply upwards and then down.
What is the physics behind the interference?
Why, you ask why this specifically has to do with interference?
The physics behind mm-hmm. the interference.
Well, the idea is basically that classically you would have probability vectors. So it's like a vector with probabilities p1 to pn. Quantum theory, you would have a density matrix. And then you would have the phases here, basically, well, I don't know, z and z prime. And if r equal to 3, it has an extra degree of freedom. We have extra phases. And you would have like 3 of those phases interfering with each other, not only pairs like in quantum theory. Yeah. You would have like a cube and then off diagonal of elements of those. Yeah. That could maybe describe such a thing. We don't know. But it doesn't really matter. You can still compute the curve without understanding them very well. Yeah.
How exactly are you defining the entanglement entropy for these?
Yeah. So the thing is, from time evolution, you get an invariant in a product. You can take in a product with a state with itself. That's something like trace rho squared. And once you have that, the log of that will be your Rényi 2 entropy. And that's all. OK, you can actually make it a bit more general. Maybe I shouldn't spend much time on that. So this is the scenario by Patrick Hayden and John Preskill, paper Black Holes as Mirrors, which features Alice and her lover and her diary that she throws into a black hole. And then there's the story to tell, like, how much time does it take until the diary comes out again? And then if you just do the calculation for that whole thing in generality, then you find the quantum case and the more general case. In the quantum case, it turns out that once your black hole is about half its lifetime, then the diary comes out very quickly. So you basically need, if you throw in 5 qubits, you just need to have 5 qubits come out. And then basically you can recover the quantum information outside. So it's either in the black hole or outside. And that's called the no hiding theorem. But it turns out if r is larger, like r is equal to 3, then it disappears quicker from the black hole, but it takes longer to actually appear outside. So it gets delocalized somehow in an intermediate region. Like the information is basically spread over all these multipartite systems. So this no hiding theorem will also be violated in that case. Okay, so why do you think this is a good idea to look at that? Well, I guess one argument would be maybe it's just the most, well, at least most conservative way I can think of to generalize quantum theory. It's just you just drop some assumptions and don't add new assumptions to quantum theory. Yeah. And you preserve all these nice things, like you preserve unitarity, causality, subsystem structure. You know what that stuff means. It's mathematically fully rigorous. Somehow it tells you what elbow room you have if you just want to assume your favorite physical principles. But here's a problem, of course. Problem is no idea how the rest of physics would fit to it. How would you write down a Hamiltonian or a Lagrangian in that framework? Nobody knows. And that's a big problem, of course.
Do you have a notion of transformation?
Yes. Yes. So good point. You can have a generator of time translation. In the quantum case, this would just be the commutator of rho, the Hamiltonian, basically. Now, the thing is, if you take the eigenvalues of that, this would be your energies. And the eigenvalues of that super operator are ei minus ej. So these are energy differences. So this tells you, like, it doesn't matter where your zero energy is. And now if you have just any arbitrary theory of that, you just say omega goes to x omega, you compute the eigenvalues of the generator, that would not come in differences. So it gives you a physically strange situation where you may have a preferred energy zero, or maybe two energies or something like that. Yeah. So that's why it doesn't really fit physics the way we know it.
So by causality, do you mean subliminality or?
Yeah, like no signaling, like if you two systems, yeah, you cannot basically communicate from the future to the past. Okay, now last slide, just some thoughts. People ask me that, like, somebody asked me, do you really think that quantum theory is modified in some regime? And then I would say, I really don't know. But I think we should take the possibility seriously. And like my main motivation for looking at the possibility would be to say, somehow quantum theory, the way you know it, just looks very suspiciously fine-tuned to fit into space-time as we know it. And so if space-time is only an approximation, then maybe quantum theory is as well. Now, what about these probabilistic theories? Do you think they really appear in that situation? I would say no. I wouldn't expect those strange theories to appear. But what I guess is what these calculations can tell us somehow is they can allow us to make an educated guess what new effects we would reasonably expect to see in these other regimes, if these regimes actually exist. So yeah, I wouldn't expect to actually another theory which is not quantum, but maybe something completely different we don't even know to describe yet, which might have effects of the kind that we derived here. Okay, so some people say, oh, I want to study quantum theory because maybe quantum theory is too weird to be the final theory. There's something wrong with quantum theory. I don't think it's too weird. So this is not my argument. I would say maybe it's not weird enough. Yeah. Okay, thank you. Yes, yes. Basically, so first thing to say, the first answer is yes. So in Lucian's language, you would have an equation that's like k equals n to the r. And that's like a number of perfectly distinguishable states. And in quantum theory, it's a Hilbert space dimension. Yeah. And here you have the degrees of freedom in your state. And that's the number of entries in a density matrix. And in quantum theory, this would be n squared. So if r is equal to 3, and you have a bit would mean, for example, like n two distinguishable states, then you would 2^3, you would have 8 degrees of freedom that actually describe your state, which is more than for a qubit. Having said that, the drawback is we don't know if the theories actually exist. Yeah? We can actually compute closed form expressions for their behavior, but nobody has constructed them so far.
Why does R need to be an integer?
It just comes out basically from some of these assumptions. Basically, it comes from if you have two systems, A and B, like here, and you compose them, then you have some number Hilbert space dimension generalized here and there as well. And if you multiply them, you get the total thing. And the degrees of freedom in your state also multiply. So these are integers that satisfy the same equation. And then you can just ask what's the possible relations between these things, such that those two equations are satisfied at the same time. And then it comes out that this is the only solution that you get. That's something that Lucien has shown years ago. So from the way you compose systems, you can derive that.
Or you could say, from the point of view of interference, two alternatives interfere, the three alternatives interfere, the four, or so on. It's not clear what it would mean to say that 3.5, alternative interfere.
Yeah. Right.
So I guess an alternative point of view is to say that you could have infinite number of possible interferences, but somehow you only see the two of them, but they're the small. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's exactly as Lucien was saying, is that the same way that classical probability theory worked on larger scales or some regime.
Yeah.
Just you couldn't see the interference. That there could be like infinite number of interferences, and the only question is what suppresses. Do you have a guess that what would suppress the higher order?
I really don't know. I guess maybe it's like in quantum field theory, you say if I write down a quantum field theory, it's actually just an effective theory, which is something that I don't know, and that goes into the renormalization scheme. Like the philosophy behind that is everything's just an effective theory. And sometimes it's like order 2 is like the simplest non-trivial one. Maybe that's the one that survives. Like if you have a Gaussian, then it's very hand-wavy. Yeah. You can study that a bit. You can say, what if I had those other theories? Could I have decoherence down to quantum and then down to classical, like as a first step?
So I guess if I would say that for quantum mechanics, the basis where action is very big, then I don't see quantum effect. Where action becomes comparable to its part, then I see quantum effect.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess we want some similar number for our quantum effects. And
yeah.
I guess maybe invent another number for that.
Yeah, maybe. It may also be that space-time enforces quantum behavior, because you have e to the is, usually, that's what you have in the path integral, and these are complex numbers, and complex numbers commute. And you need things to commute in space like separation to satisfy relativity, simultaneity. Maybe this is a path that actually leads you to quantum theory somehow.
So I can see the motivation for your information preservation assumption if you're interested in this page curse and expect all the information to come out.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, when you mentioned that the no Huygens theorem failed in these generalizations, I immediately started thinking about real quantum mechanics. But real quantum mechanics doesn't fall under your scheme because it violates the local tomography assumption.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of curious, what was the technical obstacle to relaxing the local tomography assumption and coming up with these kinds of curves for things like quantum theory of the real field?
Okay, like the thing is you basically have 20 pages of integration over representation of groups. And if you have a tensor product rule, then you know that you have tensor product representation. Then you can do it. And local tomography gives you this tensor product rule. If you drop that, then you have extra degrees of freedom that you just don't know. And then you can just cannot do the calculation.
OK. Any more questions? So I was just curious about your point of view that you expressed in the end of the talk. Would it be right to say that when you say that you don't think that these more generalized theories are the right theory, you don't think that they're the fundamental theory, but you indicated that maybe the fundamental theory would have some effective theory approximating it in a certain regime that would look like this. Was that the point of view you were expressing?
Well,
or do you want to say that these are just irrelevant and they're just toy models? So you get the idea of what could be on compare.
Okay, I really don't. I mean, this is all speculation. But
I know,
for example, you can compare with, say, special relativity. If you only know special relativity, you want to go to GR, then you could say, oh, special relativity is just Minkowski space. Maybe we can generalize it by looking at other metrics. But this is not the only idea you need. You need additional ideas, like the idea that metric could be dynamical, for example. And so I would say maybe it's a first step to study modifications of quantum theory in that sense. But I would just guess you need other ideas to say something that's really fundamentally new. That'd be my guess.
And then I also was curious. You don't, as you pointed out, the theory doesn't exist in full. But nevertheless, you're able to do these precise calculations. Mm-hmm. How did you manage that feat?
So basically, you talk about typical states there. Yeah? So you draw a state at random. And for this, you need to quantumly integrate over the unitary group to do this. And here you say, oh, suppose I just have some group of time evolutions and I integrate over that. And for the result, you don't need to know the group. You just need to know the dimension of its representation and some other data. And that you can get from these assumptions.
Okay. Any last question? Okay, thanks, Martin.